This is Rabbi Josh Yoder of the Stanton Street Shul. Thank you for downloading this class podcast. These classes are provided free of charge through the generosity of the Stanton Street Shul community and supporters like you. If you do enjoy them, please consider making a donation to our synagogue's building fund on our website's shop donate page at www.stantonstshul.com.
Good evening. It is Wednesday, May 1st, right? May 1st, 2013. I just spoke to people here off tape. Due to computer issues, we're going back to Hochiach Tochiach, which we were supposed to do last week. Though, even though tonight is May 1st, I don't know when we're actually going to get around to posting it, because I'm going to need a computer in order to do that. Anyway, the reason why we did this topic was, I think, Josh, you made a comment when we did the class on rabbinic ethics that, you know, sort of sparked the idea about doing tochacha, about, you know, how do you tell someone that they're doing something wrong? And that is, you know, I think a very important halachic idea that we're going to speak on about today. You know, it comes up often in halacha if you want to say, like, hey, you're doing this halacha wrong, but it also comes up in pretty much any matter of life of what is, you know, I guess an appropriate way of telling someone, you know, they're wrong. Anyone who's involved with anything on the internet, particularly posting, can run into trouble. Sometimes you can be, you know, too casual. Like, if I'm talking to someone personally, and we'll talk a little bit about this, you know, as we go ahead, the way I speak to one individual might not be the way they speak to another individual. Mm-hmm. If there's, say, a website, right, do I, you know, throw up, you know, really ridiculous, absurd statements? Let's say even do it anonymously so it can't get traced back to me, but that's how I really say what I'm feeling. Or do I actually sit and write a reasoned response, in which case I, you know, I wind up giving it a lot more credence than it deserves. There was one of the more, I guess, weirder moments I had in NYU. Mm-hmm. When I first got there, someone had emailed Rabbi Shalom Carmi a death threat. And Rabbi Carmi published, well, it got written up in the commentary, which is how I know about this, but he wrote a rebuttal to a death threat, like a point-by-point rebuttal. Eventually, they found the guy, and he was, you know, taken off campus. You know, that was, you know, one approach. I know of, you know, something recently where a shadchan on Saw You at Sinai ripped into someone for not calling someone back. And, like, just not just, like, hey, you really should do this, mm-hmm. but, like, just really went, you know, completely off the handle. Mm-hmm. Now, is that appropriate? Is that effective? Those are some sort of questions which we're going to deal with now. So I guess we'll go around the other way. Josh, start us off. So first pasuk where you really have to start is Vayikra 19:17.
All right. So thou shalt not hate thy brother in thy heart. Thou shalt surely rebuke thy neighbor and not bear sin because of him.
So I put this in the source sheet, dividing it up into threes. Not threes, I should say. One, I broke it up into, well, three, not threes, because there's only one three. You know what I mean. Because there are three components here. One, you don't hate someone in your heart. Two, you're supposed to surely rebuke. This is the English translation of hocheach tochiach. Double expression is, you know, attributed to emphasis. Meaning something you really ought to do. Rebuke your neighbor. Veloti sa'alav chet. And don't bear sin because of him. Right? Now, we're going to see, like, at least a little bit better, you know, about, you know, what does lotis alav chait mean? Right? Some of you might know already. When you hear, like, hocheach tochiach amitecha lotis alav chait, what were you taught if you came across this at some point? Like, how did those two go together?
That if you don't rebuke, that if you're angry at someone and you don't rebuke them, you'll just be much angrier later and and punch him in the nose or something.
All right. Well, that's, you know, the way that you just said it, Nick, integrates all three of them, which is, you know, if you're really upset with someone, it burns in your heart. And, you know, unless you actually get it out, then, you know, you're going to, when it says bear sin because of him, right? Lo tisa' alav chet, you could just go ahead and do something even worse because you're so consumed with, you know, hatred, or what's a good word for it? Indignation for what he did. You might then go out and do something worse. Others might be aware of Rashi. It's like, oh, well, if you go out and you tell someone wrong, you go out and do tochecha incorrectly, then you're just going to cause them to sin more. Mm-hmm. Which we'll discuss that a little bit later. But the first one also, but even if you do so, it still has to be from, if not a place of love, can't be from a place of hate. Meaning, and it's important to make that distinction, or at least with this particular pasuk, right? Because it's one thing to say, like, I really, Kol Yisrael are even Zalazah, all Jews, are concerned with each other, we all like each other very much and all that. You don't even need that according to this pasuk. The minimal thing is you can't hate you need to take out the hatred part, right? Sur me ra before asay tov. You take away the bad before you think about doing good, all right? Because if you hate someone, then you're not just giving tochacha, you're not just giving rebuke, you're enjoying it on a pure human visceral level. And that's not genuine tochacha. It's not really rebuke. Even if you might be 100% correctly, if it's coming from a place of hatred, right, then there's something diminished from it, and eventually it's going to come out. Here, and the other pasuk that's going to come up every now and again is from Proverbs Mishlei 9:8.
Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Reprove a wise man, and he will love thee.
So what do you think this means, even before we get to the gemaras that deal with it?
Well, some people reproof is wasted on.
It's more than that. It's more than just saying that, you can get up and tell people stuff and they're not going to listen. That happens often, trust me. But you're also talking here that if, al tochech late, pein yisna echa, there are certain individuals who don't want to hear it, and they will resent you for pointing out their flaws.
You got to pick your spots, kind of a thing.
Well, it's more than just it's more than just picking spots, and we can elaborate, on what that means a little bit later. Because I mean, there's a note. The distinction here is between a late and a chacham, right? Again, the English here is a scorner versus a wise man. You're not talking about righteous versus wicked. Mm-hmm. You're not talking about tzaddik versus rasha, because, let's face it, I mean, the rasha is going to be doing more things that you need to rebuke him for. But it's a sign of someone who's wise that they're going to want to learn more, and they're going to be more receptive. I mean, you can have someone who's generally righteous, but could still have qualities of a late, right? Who can get most things right, but don't take criticism well. I've run into plenty of people like that who just really, are incredibly defensive and thin-skinned. Even though they may be brilliant, even though they may be genuinely good people, it's a certain type of character trait. And then, that comes to more of pick your battles in terms of personality traits, which again needs to get elaborated on a little bit later. The as much as this is instruction towards a person in terms of when you give tochacha, this also works on the flip side of saying that the wise person is the one who loves tochacha. Meaning it's one of these backdoor, you could read this as backdoor musr, as a backdoor advice. Meaning like you just read it and says, oh, when I give, tochacha, when I give rebuke, I should only do it to certain people. Oh, wait a second, but wise people like rebuke. So if I want to be in this category of wise, then maybe I should be a little bit more receptive to what people have to tell me. Right? Because you're categorizing who is a late and who is a chacham. So another way of reading this isn't just for the one who's giving tochacha, but also for people in terms of receiving tochacha. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost like I almost see it as like a what came first, the chicken or the egg kind of a thing. Is a wise man, is he wise because he can accept tochacha, because he can accept rebuke, or because he accepts rebuke, is he wise? That kind of
there
thing.
There you go. That's a wonderful point there. All right, so now let's look at some of the Gemaras that discuss this idea of tochacha. So one is Gemara in Bava Metzia 31a. Perhaps hocheach means once, tochiach twice. He replied, hocheach implies even 100 times. As for tochiach, I only know that the master must rebuke the disciple. Whence do we know that the disciple must rebuke his master? From the phrase hocheach tochiach, implying all circumstances. This is a pretty big deal, and this idea we're actually going to revisit a little bit later, but it when dealing with a verse, Hochach Tochach, in terms of explaining the double Lashon, what this Gemara, how this Gemara interprets it is as follows. One, even 100 times, right? Now, afilu me'apa amayim, in the language of the Gemara, like, and you can say, well, hey, you know, does that mean you, and this seems, you can either say it's idiomatic, and that it's limitless, afilu. So what happens when you hit 101? You just stop, right? And you start, like, having a counter. Mm-hmm. And the other, you know, part, which is also incredibly important, a Talmid is supposed to give tochacha to a Rav, right? It's not just a one-way street here in terms of, well, we have a hierarchy. Good people can all, or, you know, the people on top give tochacha to the people on the bottom. There's sort of a mutuality here. And you would assume that the Rav being a chacham would be the type to accept rebuke. But it's not a matter of stature. The matter is, according to this Gemara, someone is doing something wrong. You're supposed to correct them. How many times? Many times as it takes. Mm-hmm. That's what this Gemara says. Another Gemara in Arachin disagrees, but before we go there, Josh, go through what I have here, source 4a. This is from Shmuel Aleph, 1 Samuel chapter 20, 30 to 33. And you'll see why that have to do this before the Gemara.
Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan and said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman, don't I know that you have sided with your son of
Yishai
to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you? As long as the son of Yishai lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send someone to bring him to me, for he must die. Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Jonathan asked his father. But Saul hurled his spear at him to kill him. Then Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David.
Right, so this was not when Shaul HaMelech was acting at his most mentally stable. You know, he thought that David was going to usurp his throne with good reason. So he has this very weird exchange with his son, insults him, you know, says, you know, "Don't you know shame, as long as David's alive, you're never going to be king." And Jonathan's like, "Wait, why should we kill him? What'd he do?" And his father throws a spear at him. So yeah, keep that in mind. If anyone has, you know, disagreements with parents, it could be much worse. Hmm. So this, you know, this passage is the basis for the Gemara and Arachin that we're about to see on 16a that puts on more limits in terms of how tochacha, how rebuke is supposed to go. Continue, Josh.
Okay. How far shall we reproof be? How far shall reproof be administered? Rav said, "Until he," the reprover, "be beaten." Samuel said, "Until he be cursed." Rabbi Yochanan said, "Until he be rebuked." This is a point at issue between Tanan. Rabbi Eliezer said, "Until he be beaten." Rabbi Yeshua said, "Until he be cursed." Ben Azi said, "Until he be rebuked." Said Rabbi Nechama ben Yitzchak. All the three expounded one scriptural verse. It is written, "Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, Thou son of a perverse rebellion, do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Yishai to thine own shame, and unto the shame of thy mother's nakedness? And it is written, and Saul cast his spear at him to smite him. The one who said above, until he be beaten, said so because it is written, to smite him. The other, who said, until he be cursed, said so because it is written, to thine own shame and to the shame of thy mother's nakedness. The other, who said, until he be rebuked, snarl of rejection, said so because it is written, then Saul's anger was kindled."
Right. So you've got, yeah, that's it. Right. So based on that passage, we have three opinions about that actually give halachic limits to tochacha. One is until someone hits you. A second is when someone curses you. And then a third is if someone basically throws it back at you. Right. Both, you know, I guess all three are signs that the person is just not receptive. The question is, how far do you push? At which point do you say you've done your job? Now, keep in mind that these, all three limits might have been based out of the pasuk, but only one really seems to fit the verses, because It was only after Shaul hurled a spear at him that Yochanan stopped. Mm-hmm. After he gets cursed, he sort of continues. So unless you say, well, yeah, then that was a little bit too far, perhaps. But if that's your basis, Yonatan actually still said, hey, you know, even after being insulted and even after, you know, being cursed, he says, actually, you know, wait, what's he done? He continues, Shaul threw the spear. And then he kind of realizes, yeah, this isn't going to go anywhere.
But if you look at it, the part in context, actually looks a lot more like Saul's rebuking Jonathan rather than the other way around.
Well, that is the point. But Saul might be rebuking Jonathan, but Jonathan continues back, right? That explains the opinion of Rav Yochanan Adnezifa, mm-hmm. right? So you're right, meaning that you are correct, but it also, you know, there's someone else here, because why is Shaul rebuking Jonathan? What did Jonathan do? I mean, you can say, oh, you're not obeying your father? Well, yeah, but your father's telling him to kill someone who doesn't deserve it. You would think that that's a place where, you know, a son is supposed to stick up to his father. You know, Yishimov aviv tirov et chapudo tai tishmaru. If you're supposed to listen to your parents until they tell you to break Shabbat, you know, as much as you have to listen and obey your parents, you know, they're not allowed to. Well, I shouldn't say they're not allowed to. If they tell you to break halacha, you're not allowed to listen to them, even though there's a biblical commandment usually. So, yeah, Yonatan's still giving Musar back to him. So even though we've got one Gemara in Bavra Metzia that says even 100 times, we have another statement from Arachin that only takes it until three possible opinions that has to do with whatchamacallit, the limits. Reaction.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's think about why do you need these limits, even before we go on to the next source.
Well, you don't want to. Well, I guess. I mean, there's a number of different reasons that I could think of, but one would be that once you reach this limit, you're kind of going to be talking on deaf ears.
Okay.
So there's just no point to continue rebuking if you're not going to make any progress.
Mm-hmm.
The other could be for your safety. I mean, if you're getting spears thrown at you, maybe it's time to stop saying things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Those are the two that came to mind first.
Right. But it also shows, you know, well, actually, you know what? I'll hold off on that point I was going to make until we get to the end of this section. Take the next one, Yevamot 65b.
Rav Elia, further stay in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Shimon, as one is commanded to say that which will be obeyed, so is one commanded to say not to say that will not, which will not be obeyed. Rav Ava stated, is a duty, for it is said in Scripture, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee, refuser my man, and he will love me. Rashi is, for it's written, rebuke your friend, rebuke someone who will listen to you.
Right, so I think when the Rashi is like, what does it mean? So according to this Gemara in Yevamot, based on the what it says in Mishle that we saw, you are only supposed to rebuke someone who's going to listen to you. Now this leads to a fascinating case that we'll elaborate on in the second, in the next source, I mean. Let's say you don't know.
Right.
What are you supposed to do? How do you know someone's going to listen to you or someone is or someone isn't going to listen to you? What do you think?
Well, previous experience could definitely be one tip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that I've rebuked this guy about this before. Clearly he didn't care, so I'm going to keep it to myself this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's kind of a matter of practical wisdom.
That what do you mean?
To say, you know, especially if you know the person, you know, you kind of know, hopefully you kind of have a sense of when you're doing something in a way that might have an impact and when not. Also, maybe also it's a matter of, you know, how. I mean, there are ways to say things
right.
That will be listened to and ways not to be.
We'll get there in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you put at least what we've seen so far together, we kind of get mixed signals. On one hand, we're supposed to rebuke even 100 times. Mm-hmm. There are also limits that, you know, are put on us in terms of when, when we're supposed to stop, such as if we get rebuked ourselves back, or if we get cursed, or if the person, you know, tries to hit us, mm-hmm. right? And here we're saying that, hey, wait a second, if, you know, they're not going to listen, you actually shouldn't rebuke at all. Here's a practical example where this came up. This is Gemara Beitza 30a that I you know, somewhat familiar with for reasons. If people are listening, you'll know why. Rava the son of Rav Chanan said to Abaye, "We have learnt you may not clap hands or slap the thighs or dance, and yet we indeed, referring to on Shabbat, yet we indeed see that people do this and we do not take them to task." He replied to him, "According to your opinion, that which Rabba said, a man may not sit at the entrance of a lechi, lest an object should roll away and he come to carry it 4 cubits in a public thoroughfare. Yet, there are these women who take their water rugs, go and sit at the entrance of the alley, and we do not say anything to them." Right? So, Rabba the son of Rav Chanan complained to Abaye, "Wait, according to, I mean, the Sinekira Mishnah that appears on Beitzin 36b, that you're not allowed to dance and clap on Shabbos, yet people are doing it and you're not saying anything." And he gave an analogous case. "Well, you're also not supposed to sit at a lechi, which would be the boundary line between, let's say, territories on Shabbat. We're going from one to the other, would facilitate carrying. And, you know, the way that you avoid it is when you don't actually hang out on the border, there's less of a likelihood for you to do it, for you to violate carrying, but people do it anyway. So what does he say? But let Israel go their way. Hanach lem Yisrael, better that they should sin in ignorance than presumptuously. Mutav sheyu shogigin ve'al yehu mezidin. Better they sin in error than sin intentionally. Here I also say, let Israel go their way. It is better that they should err in ignorance than presumptuously, as it's described here. This, however, applies only to rabbinical prohibition, but not to a biblical prohibition. But it is not so. Whether it, the prohibition, is biblical or rabbinical, we do not tell them anything. For the additional time on the Day of Atonement is a biblical injunction, yet people eat and drink until dusk, and we do not say anything to them. Now, this is an important halacha. According to this last one, you're supposed to do a Tosefet Yom Tov, or for Yom Kippur, meaning you don't start the fast day immediately at, you know, you don't eat, you're not supposed to eat until the very last moment, but they did at a certain point, even though, according to Chazal, this was biblical law. And yet, even for biblical law, if the people aren't going to listen to you, you don't say anything. Now, this came up a lot because, you know, as a kid, I didn't dance or clap on Shabbos and had lots of weird discussions at NCSY and the like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a whole discussion on this, which we saw in the Sunday class on Tosafot, in terms of, I use the term inconsistent applications of batel ta'am batel gzerah, of when a reason goes away, the law goes away with it too. A whole discussion in terms of the halachic merits about dancing or clapping on Shabbat. But say, look at it today. When you have a custom, or let's see, I don't even want to use the custom, the term custom is loaded. When you have a practice that is so ingrained in people's social thought or identity, and you can't change it, then according to this Gemara, don't even bother trying. If I were to go up in a typical shul and say, hey, it's actually usher to dance on Shabbat and Yom Tov, which means that hakafot that are done in most shuls violate rabbinic law. Now, I happen to believe that statement is true, but it would get me, I mean, are people going to listen to it? Of course not. And in fact, there is quite an established tendency, largely in thanks to Tosafot, of rationalizing commonly accepted practices even if they go against explicit textual law, like we saw with things like Mayim Achronim and some other stuff in that class. If anyone's interested, it was in the Halachic Process class on early Ashkenaz, specifically law versus custom. But you could apply that today too. Like things like, you could probably come up with your own ideas for things that are less of an issue. And this is actually a matter that pulpit rabbis everywhere have to deal with.
That's actually, I was going to ask something along those lines. Let's say, so you're supposed to rebuke people who will listen, not people who won't listen. But let's say, so something like dancing on Yom Tov, which is widely practiced, and you think that virtually everyone won't listen or something along those lines, fine. But let's take something a little more gray. Okay, let's talk about like Lashon Hara, for instance. Okay?
Yep.
You know, obviously, it's probably one of the more challenging things that a lot of people have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So let's say a pulpit rabbi goes up and he's giving mussar to his congregation about not speaking Lashon Hara because he honestly believes that some people will take it to heart and really try it. But he definitely must know that there are people in his congregation that either will ignore him or not listen or not care enough to change their ways. So if he's rebuking an entire congregation, is that not giving it to people who won't listen?
Well, we'll deal with that in the next source. Okay. And that's a fantastic piece about, you know, more of the how, right? But even before we get to the how, you have to deal with the when and what, right? So, you know, in this shul, like, I've had my own strategies for it. Like, I've, you know, said repeatedly, I think that the davening here is too late on Shabbat at 9:30. Why? Because we miss Man Kriyat Shema most of the year, and because people come late, we miss Man Tefillah parts of the year, too. Right? I've learned to accept it because, based on the demographics and the needs of this shul, I understand why it has to be done here. If I... You know, there is no synagogue where everyone just does whatever the rabbi says simply because he says it. And you have to pick your battles. There were certain things I was able, you know, to change. Like, we no longer count the Aron Kodesh for a minyan when there are nine people. Right? You know, that that took a fight. But again, you have to pick what, you have to pick when, and you also have to pick the how. You know, and, you know, let's say I decided to move davening earlier. Does that mean people are going to show up? Of course not. One thing that I decided to do, though, was I started including in the announcement sheets, in the weekly emails, hey, here's when Sosman Kriyat Shema is. Here's when Sosman Tefillah is. And I, if it's Sosman Kriyat Shema, it's before we even get up to it in Korbanot, say, please say Kriyat Shema before you come to shul. I actually got a complaint about that, believe it or not. Someone says, oh, no one knows what it means and it doesn't bring anyone closer to Judaism. That was a complaint I ignored. as you see that, I still do it now. You know, so there are ways, but these are subtle things. Now, keep in mind here, what there is a cost to doing tochacha, right? And this is where you have part of the element of Le'isa Alav Chet. If you don't know something is wrong, right? And I know that you don't know something is wrong. If I tell you that something is wrong, there's a bit of an economics risk-reward thing. One of two things can happen. Either you say, wow, you're right, I should stop doing that, and you stop doing what's wrong. Everything's good. Or say, eh, I don't care, and you continue doing it, in which case, whatever sin you've done is now exacerbated. Because you're no longer doing it b'shogeg. It's like, oh, I never realized it. But rather, you're doing it b'mezid. You're doing it intentionally. Right? And you can argue, and he can counter, it's like, well, I didn't know, but it's like, but you did know. And you're never, like, you know, there are certain things which you might be able to guess as opposed to others. Right? Like, let's say you know someone keeps kosher, and they happen to pick up something that lost its hechsher, right, and is no longer kosher certified. Now, whether or not that means the food is unkosher or not, separate discussion which we speak about in Shul on numerous occasions. But let's say the food actually went flat out treif. All right. And you happen to know this. So if I catch you in a supermarket and I say, hey, wait, you shouldn't eat that because that's not right. Right. On one hand, that's tochacha, but it isn't tochacha. You are informing someone to enable them to keep the halacha a little bit better because you know that they normally don't eat it. And here they're about to make a mistake. You're preventing them from making a mistake. In the back of my mind, that is a little bit different than when someone gets up and paskins. It's a weird thing that I find in the whole broader Jewish community, that for as much as people insist on deferring to Gedolim, to great rabbis, people have no qualms about paskening to other people, here's what you have to do, here's what the halacha is, when it could be a machlok. It's like, oh, well, this is what I heard from my rabbi, and therefore this must be the universal law that you also have to do. Right? Now, normally, you would think, like, paskening is something you should leave to, say, any... Well, you could argue about any rabbi, but at least have some... I mean, you know, leave it to the professionals, whatever you treat the rabbinic ordination as a licensed psak. But even people who generally have a either distrust or disdain of the modern-day rabbinate themselves have no problem telling other people what the halacha is. And, you know, I in certain areas... Most of what I do isn't education as much as re-education. Or people will say, hey, someone told me blah, 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 is this true? Or is this correct? And this is even worse on the internet when you know people just have no problem spewing out these ideas, even though, you know, as It's almost like a Kal Vachomer. If I'm unqualified to make such statements, mm-hmm. Kal Vachomer, most of these people who are making these statements are equally unqualified. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it gets really, 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 really tricky in that case mm-hmm. of, you know, even before you get up and, you know, want to correct someone, you have to be pretty sure that you're right. Mm-hmm. No? Either in terms of the halakha, that you know such and such is the law, mm-hmm. or such that someone is breaking the law, which mm-hmm. means you also need to know the mitzvot. You need to know the reality. Mm-hmm. Like, you can say, like, oh, I, you know, you can say, oh, you shouldn't eat that because I heard the place lost the hechsher. It's like, yeah, it lost one hechsher, but it got another hechsher, mm-hmm. right? That happens often. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, people are not clear about that. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. they'll say, so-and-so is no longer under such and such hashgacha. Like, that's true, but it's under someone else's hashgacha, mm-hmm. that's just as fine. All right? So mm-hmm. there's the plain, simple matter of being right mm-hmm. before you start, like, or at least that's certainly going to have to adjust. Mm-hmm. Accordingly, how do you tell someone, you know, directly versus not? Mm-hmm. Some people like yelling, you know, that's just mm-hmm. how they operate. Other people do more of a passive-aggressive type thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I kind of heard, you know, this, it shouldn't be done, mm-hmm. right? And, but often, like, and sometimes they will say, really? Like, some more information. Like, at what point, like, how, you're mm-hmm. talking here about halachot of personal dynamics, which are really, really hard to pin down mm-hmm. because you're talking about two moving targets. The moving target about you mm-hmm. and the moving target about the other person. By moving target, I mean no two interactions are going to be identical. Mm-hmm. Even with the same people, mm-hmm. if both are in a good mood, you're going, you know, things are going to go off more smoothly mm-hmm. than if you're both going to be in a bad mood, mm-hmm. right? Here's where, you know, we get a little bit more into the how. Josh, this is Gemara Arachin 16b.
Okay. Whence do we know that if a man sees something unseemly in his neighbor, he is obliged to reprove him? Because it is said, thou shalt surely rebuke. If he rebuked him and he did not accept it, whence do we know that he must rebuke him again? The text states, surely rebuke always. One might assume this to be obligatory, even though his face blanched. Therefore, the text states, thou shalt not bear sin because of it.
So here we have another limit. This is actually an extension of the Gemara that we saw in Arachin earlier. Another limit about tochacha is like, you have to be careful about the other person's feelings too. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's less about him getting, you know, angry, like what he... Like, this even sets it up, I would say, a few steps earlier. You don't just wait until he starts, you know, wailing on you. But rather, you know, you don't just keep at it, especially if someone's, like, really embarrassed by it. And here's a really important line by Rav Tarfon.
It was taught in Breita. Rav Tarfon said, I wonder whether there is anyone in the generation who accepts reproof. For if one says to him, remove the mote from between your eyes, he would answer, remove the beam from between your eyes. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, I wonder if there is one in this generation who knows how to reprove.
All right, so stop here for a second. So Rabbi Tarfon really, you know, nails it here, where he says, it's hard to hear it, but it's equally hard to give it. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, again, this is a dynamic. If you do it in too much of an accusatory way, someone else is going to... Yeah, you know, going to come right back. Now, the idiom that he used, I find fascinating. I know you turned the page to The Surprise is Lost. Do you know, like, where the another source of this idiom? If someone says you've got, like, a mote in your eye, they say you'll just throw it back at you? So, well, I'm not going to make any value judgments on the not knowing, but you find it in the Sermon of the Mount in the New Testament, Matthew 7, 1 through 5.
Oh. Much better translation, by the way.
Well, this is from the, I think that's the New King James Version.
Oh, okay. Better, you know, it's better than the old.
What can I do?
Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye.
All right. And
that
it's also
sense now.
Right. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, it's also repeated in, you know, Luke, you know, what they call the Sermon on the Plain. It's pretty much the same story, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Point is this, you know, let's look at this statement attributed to, you know, Jesus at the Sermon on the Mount. What's his argument? You are in no place to critique anyone because you've got your own problems, right? You're constantly saying, why don't you take care of what's in your eye, like, where, instead of looking at other people, right? And what Rav Tarfon was complaining about, and I don't think that the idiom was picked by chance, to me, it seems he's actually responding to this Christian idea. Because according to Jesus's explanation here, there's a, you lack moral justification for giving any sort of rebuke. Because unless you yourself are perfect, you are in no place to correct others. It is, as what Chacham Va'or might describe, a very hierarchical type of system here, where you have to be perfect in order for others. Judge not, lest ye be judged. Whereas according to Torah, the whole Hochiach Tochiach thing, effectively, well, and we'll actually go through, you know, a couple of other sources here. One that might even seem to back up what, you know, was said in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, Pasuk in Zephaniah says, Koshishu v'koshu hagoy lo nichsaf. This is Zephaniah 2:1. Gather yourselves together, you shameful nation. According to the Gemara in 18a, there's a discussion over whether or not the high priest can be judged. So it says, it's obvious. No, but it's necessary to state that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, may be judged. That too is obvious, for if he cannot be judged, how can he judge? Is it not written, Hit Koshishu v'koshishu, which Reish Lakish interpreted, adorn yourself first, then adorn others. Kashet atzmecha v'achar kach kashet acherim. Effectively meaning, you know, take care of yourself first, and then worry about others. So from a perspective of pure judging, then yes. However, we also acknowledge, at least in Torah, where do we get our moral justification from? It's not from being perfect, right? Pasuk in Kohelet 7:20, Ki adam ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yachata. There is no person, no human on earth, who is completely righteous and does not sin. Mm-hmm. In Divrei Hayamim, Book 9 in Studies, in the part of Shlomo's dedication to the temple, he revisits this idea from Kohelet. Well, I don't know which came first. Let's say, you know, Divrei Hayamim came before Kohelet, both attributed to King Solomon, at least this passage. When they sin against you, for there's no one who does not sin, ki yechata ulach, ki ein adam asher lo yechata. Right? Same type of, you know, same language, almost identical.
Who's the you in question?
God.
Okay.
Right? And you become angry with them and give them over to the enemy who takes them captive land far away or near. And if they have a change of heart in the land where they are captive and repent and plead with you in their land of their captivity and say, we have sinned, we have done wrong and acted wickedly. And if they turn back to you with all their heart and soul in the land of their captivity they were taken and pray towards the land you gave in their, you gave their ancestors or the city you have chosen towards their temple, I have built for your name, then from heaven your dwelling place, hear their prayer and please and uphold their cause and forgive your people who have sinned against you. Right? So this is, you know, sort of an imploring God to say, like, hey, you know, when your people sin, because let's face it, they're going to sin, right? Heed their prayers. All right, fine. The operative words here are, though, they're going to sin. Despite knowing that people are going to sin, you still have a mitzvah to do tochacha. Now, instead of saying you need to be perfect in order to give tochacha, what Rabbi Tarfon is kind of saying is, almost without using the words, I'm not sure it exists in Aramaic, empathy. It's hard to receive musar, or tochacha, and it's hard to give it. So, in theory, you can say, well, maybe you should give tochacha in the same way that you'd like to receive tochacha. Like, you try to think, what would work for you? If someone, you know, if someone's going to tell you something's wrong, what works for you? Maybe do it in that way. Now, granted, what works for you might not work for someone else, but there are a whole bunch of gradations here in terms of, again, what and how. And a lot of this is going to depend on relationships, right? I know even in my position as rabbi, there are people who are going to take me seriously, many, many more who won't. And the same thing probably applies to, you know, you two or anyone else who happens to be listening, that you're going to, everyone, think about this. I could reach people that you can't, and you can reach people whom I can't. And this applies to every person, not just rabbis. So right off the bat, you've got certain people are going to be a little bit more open to what certain individuals have to say. Then there's a matter of how do you go about doing it? Some people appreciate getting a whole bunch of sources thrown at them. Other people really, really don't. One person told me, like, when someone asked me a halacha question. When people ask me a halacha question, I say, here's where I think the law is, and I try to explain why, how I got there. And the person stopped me in the middle and said, I don't want to know. Like, I don't want to learn. Just tell me what I need to do. Right? So some people just want to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. Right? In which case, other people might be better. Mm-hmm. And I would also say, once you kind of know that, maybe reach, if someone's doing something wrong, reach out to someone who might have a better voice. And that happens actually kind of frequently. Meaning, have you ever been in a case where someone said, you know, can you please talk to someone about something? Right? Why do people do that? Because, like, you go talk to them. Well, I can't. Why? Well, either you tried and failed. Or, I can't because I'm a nogeya bedavar. I'm somehow intertwined. Right? Or there's too much baggage there. Or let's say it is a matter of hypocrisy, right? Because, you know, if I'm doing something wrong, I tell you that something else is wrong, and people are going to throw it back, even though what I'm saying, you know, might be based out of my own experience, right? It would be like if Bill Clinton came out for a thing about, you know, hey, don't cheat on your wife, right? Now, if he starts doing that, it's like, you got to be kidding me. Unless, you know, maybe he says, look, you know, I've done it, I've repented. It's like, this is really not good. For a whole lot of reasons, like take it from someone who knows. Like it's almost, you know, I don't want to use the idiom born again, but it's almost like someone who does tshuva, you know, says, wait a second, you know, I've done this. This isn't a good thing. Like, yeah, you know, and it's more of arguing from experience as opposed to a moral high ground. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's something that I think it's very easy to just throw stuff out quickly. My own approach is to be, you know, as non-threatening as possible. And there are things that I've learned over time, just also based on my own personality. And I don't think there are or can be straight answers or straight formula, simply because every case is going to be different. And you're going to have to pick your battles. You might pick right, you might pick wrong. But you also have to realize what's at stake. You know, going around and telling people that they're doing stuff wrong might not very well be appreciated, even though people want to do that, rabbis or no rabbis. And, you know, how do you go up and tell someone who's giving bad tochacha that, hey, you're not giving good tochacha? Or, you know, you got to tone it down a notch or at least get someone else involved. It's hard because you're dealing with people. And people, and not just people, you're dealing with relationships. People don't like thinking about relationships. People don't like thinking about human interactions. People, I found, don't like even accepting the basic premise that other people are not like them. Are just immediately goes, well, this is how I want, so therefore it must be that everyone else must think and operate the same way. To some extent, that, you know, it is going to be true, but I think people often will take it too far. So, yeah, there wasn't going to be an answer here as much as to show just how complex the issue of tochacha is. And it certainly applies, you know, in pretty much any media, be it in person, be it online, online in a public forum, online in, say, a private forum. Again, maybe, look, they're friends of mine. I can be a lot more, what's a good word for it? Colloquial. Let's use that term, right? Don't have to pick words as carefully because, you know, we're friends and, you know, I've got friends who are, you know, comfortable telling me you're a complete idiot. Although there are also a lot of non-friends who tell me that too, but you get the point. Like there's sometimes, you know, a good friend can be, you know, more direct and more passionate and be more effective than, say, a random stranger, right? Because you know, from that very first part of the pasuk, lo tinaseh techicha belvavecha, right? From someone who you know cares about you, it's not coming from a place of hatred. From anyone else, it might be. As long as it's not coming from a place of hatred. And again, there's no difference in saying it's coming from a place of love and a place of hatred. For tochacha, it's harder to see the love, right? Because you are kind of being attacked. But at the very minimum level, it can't be, you know, because you hate a guy, or at least it can't because you hate him personally. Once you do that, you're going to lose all credibility, even if you happen to be right. Okay? So hopefully we'll get back to our, you know, semi-normal schedule once technical issues get taken care of. Have a great week.